This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Wei Ting and I are reviewing the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix with 6 straight days of reviews. The Double Shot will be coming back on Friday, September the 27th. We will be doing a free review of episode 1, and then episodes 2 through 6 will be covered exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Plus, this month, MCU Later is back covering Agatha All Along, and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have you covered for New Japan's Destruction in Kobe. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Wei Ting, the A-team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wei Take the Mic.
And hello, everyone. Welcome to Rewind Around. John and Wei with you tonight, moments after Raw from Ontario.
California.
Yeah. California, correct. How are you tonight?
Doing pretty well. Doing okay. Had a good weekend. How about you?
I had a very good weekend too. That's nice to hear on your part as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start the week off. Let's go.
There's a lot coming up this week, folks. We are going to be doing a lot over the next couple of days, as we are going to be bringing back the shot this week. So off the top, we will mention that this week, the Mr. McMahon series is dropping. You would have no idea if you watched Raw tonight, but it is dropping in 2 days. It is going to be 6 episodes, dropping late Tuesday, early Wednesday morning. So what we are going to be doing, starting Thursday, Brandon Thurston and I are doing a show Thursday at 1 Eastern, a special Thursday edition of the show today. We're mainly going to be focusing on the first and sixth episodes, which are going to be especially the episode 6, covering the Janelle Grant aspect of the story. And then Wei and I are going to do 6 individual reviews, dedicating one show per episode beginning Friday. So it'll be a free release on Friday covering episode 1. And then you're going to have to jump on board the Post Wrestling Cafe, because from Saturday through Wednesday, we are going to have daily releases covering episodes 2 through 6. So all members, postwrestlingcafe.com, you will have Wei and I covering all 6 episodes this week. It's a very big week on the cafe, not just the Mr. McMahon series. We'll have Destruction in Kobe. We're going to have all of our regulars, MCU Later, a power-packed week on the cafe.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, might be one of the most, maybe the most buzzed about documentary release that we might have ever had to talk about.
Well, it got more attention tonight because Vince McMahon unlocked his Twitter account and decided to dust it off and tweet from his account. His first tweet since 2023. Do you think he's been logged in on his personal device all this time, or do you think he had to figure out his password?
I'm guessing he might have had to figure out the password, or
was
whoever
he the one tweeting out prior? I mean, this is he has not tweeted since his resignation. Was he even in control?
You know, I'm very curious. What was his last tweet? Okay, and I guess it was
the merger
from April 3rd of 2023. Just a photographic with the Vince McMahon quote talking about just some bullshit about how excited he is, and then the one prior to that, July 22nd, 2022 at 77. It's time for me to retire. Thank you, WWE Universe. And then before that, it was May 19th, talking about Andre the Giant on his 76th birthday. What would have been? Not much of a tweeter. You know, maybe really turned off by the new algorithm. Maybe he doesn't like the For You tab. Maybe that's why he quit.
Well, this is his statement done in this interesting text choice we have.
And what is this? Times New Roman?
It does look like, you know, Times New Roman, bold, okay. Maybe a size 12. Yeah, he says, okay. I don't regret participating in this Netflix documentary. The producers had an opportunity to tell an objective story about my life and the incredible business I built, which were equally filled with excitement, drama, fun, and a fair amount of controversy and life lessons. Unfortunately, based on an early partial cut I've seen, this doc falls short and takes the predictable path of conflating the Mr. McMahon character with my true self, Vince. The title and promos alone make that evident. A lot has been misrepresented or left out entirely in an effort to leave viewers intentionally confused. The producers use typical editing tricks with out-of-context footage and dated sound bites, etc., to distort the viewer's perception and support a deceptive narrative. In an attempt to further their misleading account, the producers use a lawsuit based on an affair I used as evidence that I am, in fact, Mr. McMahon. I hope the viewer will keep an open mind and remember that there are two sides to every story.
An affair I ended, is what he wrote.
An affair that he ended.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, this is notable because it's, I guess, some official maybe dialogue we've had from Vince McMahon, not just about the documentary, but about the lawsuit. I guess our first in some time, I mean, not from a lawyer, I guess. Although this is obviously very carefully, you know, planned and delivered. So yeah, a lot of interesting thoughts, you know, with something like this. He is choosing to distance himself. This is now officially unapproved Vince McMahon documentary, unauthorized Vince McMahon documentary.
Which, right? In the absence of, like, it is amazing that, yes, I think there's a fair amount of circulation and knowledge that this documentary series is dropping, but I mean, correct me if you have seen any of the producers do any interviews in the lead up to this. Like, I've seen nothing. And this is dropping on Wednesday. And
we've heard from, what's the lead gentleman's name who's producing this?
Chris Smith?
No, the other guy.
Bill Simmons?
Bill Simmons, yeah. I mean, we've heard him mention it, but I don't think I've heard a
specific
He's
mentioned it on his podcast, but yeah, I haven't interview. Seen him do any media for it. And maybe they just feel like this is going to speak for itself. But quite frankly, in the absence of that, as I was stating, like, this is as much of a push that Netflix could ask for. Like,
this is the greatest thing Netflix could ask for.
The complaint that you're seeing is Netflix going to take it easy on Vince McMahon because of their relationship with WWE? And this makes it very clear. This is now the documentary series Vince McMahon does not want you to see. And that's only going to spur. Well, if he's seen this, then it's got to be pretty damning, is the conclusion you would take. Like, this statement here is only going to enhance people's curiosity to see what inspired Vince McMahon to put out a statement and log on to Twitter in 2024 to address.
It's the parental advisory explicit content sticker on a rap album that is the ultimate sign of, hey, like, to a kid, hey, I gotta listen to this. I mean, you and I were already interested in this plenty enough to begin with, but yeah, with a lot of suspicion about, like, whether or not they were going to take it easy on Vince, we could still make that assessment coming off of it. This documentary could still not be hard enough, but obviously to Vince McMahon's taste, especially in regards to the Janelle Grant lawsuit and the way they handle it, he feels it's inaccurate. And
do you think he really does not regret participating in this Netflix documentary? Because that's his first line. I don't regret participating in this Netflix documentary. But there was a clear time that you stopped participating in this documentary. So I think, like, that is going to be a criticism of those that are reading this, is that, listen, if you feel you are not going to come off well here, you didn't give your chance to defend yourself in this documentary. You pulled out prior to your resignation and did not speak with them afterward, where I am certain they would have very much accommodated you had you been able to sit down with them and give your side of the story. It's kind of hard to cry foul that you're not being properly represented when you removed yourself from the process.
Sure. Hard to say, like, what would be going through his mind in a decision like that. I'm it could just be, hey, like, the more attention I choose to put on this, the more I speak on it, it's still going to reflect poorly on me. Just as I think a statement like this we're reading right now ultimately reflects poorly on Vince, sheds only more light onto these accusations. And as long as you're doing that, I just don't think that he'll ever come out looking good. It could just be not wanting to be a part of it at all. Whether or not he truly regrets participating in the documentary, it's really hard to say. I mean, I don't think he'll come out and say, I regret participating in the documentary. You know, he's only seen a partial cut, okay? So maybe he's going to love the rest of this.
Do you think he violated an embargo?
Maybe he got a screener somehow. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. This is, I'm guessing, going to ramp up the buzz for this documentary that much more. You know, especially on a Monday night. Do you believe his request for the viewer to keep an open mind and remember that there are two sides to every story? Do you feel like, you know, let's say this is released on Tuesday, by Wednesday afternoon, this will be the case with most people?
I think you're going to have the full gamut of responses. Do not be stunned at all that you're going to have plenty of people that are going to go into this with the belief that, like, the response that we've seen from a lot of wrestlers is that, yes, he did these awful things, but Vince McMahon also created this wonderful world and Netflix is trying to diminish his legacy. You will have that response from people that want to, that are going to look at this as an unfair hit piece on Vince McMahon. You're also going to have people that, like, listen, this is a documentary on the life of Vince McMahon, and there are many deserving attributes that should be assigned to Vince McMahon's legacy. Does all of these allegations override that? I think for many, the answer is yes. But that's ultimately what this is going to come down to. I think episode 6 is going to be the episode that is going to be the most heavily focused upon, and how deep they go, how thorough they are, who are the voices that they lean on in the absence of Vince McMahon and Janelle Grant, who we know will not be speaking about the lawsuit or anything that happened since the resignation. I'd also add, I'm very disappointed when I heard Jim Ross on his podcast state that there was no outreach to Jim Ross. Like, if I was making a Vince McMahon documentary and I was making a list of people that I would want to have on there, Jim Ross is not at the top of the list, but he's definitely in the top 10, maybe even higher. He, in terms of somebody that you know you're going to get credible information from, that has seen the good and the bad, all things in between with Vince McMahon, and is not tied to the WWE in the sense that he's going to be playing defense for Vince McMahon. And was his right-hand man for so many years. And the fact that he was not even reached out to, again, I'm reserving judgment till I see these 6 episodes, but that to me is a mark against this, that someone like Jim Ross was not contacted.
So do we know if there are any active AEW employees that are a part of this documentary?
I mean, I think that it's, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, there probably are not. But that was not going to stop Jim Ross from being in this either.
No, but would it have stopped the filmmakers from reaching out? Because
that should not be a concern of theirs if they have final cut and WWE does not.
So what was the intent of this documentary at its genesis, though, John?
You know, to tell the Vince McMahon story. That should be the purpose of this.
With or without the authorization of Vince McMahon, though, when it began? When they came up with the list of people that they wanted to speak to, was this supposed to be a glowing documentary about Vince McMahon at the beginning, or was it always meant to be this sort of, I guess, what Vince is terming as a bit of a hit piece?
When this began in 2021, this was not designed to just be like some... they were going to address the controversies, which were, in hindsight, I guess, not as thorough as the ones we have now, not as recent as these ones. But this was not going to just be some fluff piece from the start. This was right. Like for Netflix, like this was going to be, you know, digging into a lot of Vince McMahon's past as well.
Sure. But was there some directive within them to not want to speak to people that might not have been employed by the WWE or might have been at the time employed by a rival company? We can speculate maybe that as part
listen, of the I'm sure that's the reason. I don't think it's a justifiable one. If you're trying to tell the story here, like what to me, that holds no water. If you're in one hand stating that Netflix has the final cut and WWE and Vince McMahon did not have the final say on this, and you're making your choices based on promotional affiliation at the expense of the story, like I feel Jim Ross would have been someone that in any one of these episodes, he would be all over this documentary. He was involved in how many people that are going to speak that openly, that have ties to the territory system, to the Attitude Era boom, right up to the present. Like, this was somebody that, I mean, I'm just looking at, and like, I'd far rather hear him than a lot of the talking heads that we're going to see if you want that kind of thoroughness that works so closely with Vince McMahon.
We'll find out when we watch the documentary, like how close they get to the truth and whether or not its true intent was to give like sort of their verse, like Vince's version, the WWE version of the story, or if there's a real, you know, aim and effort from the documentary producers to actually try to give you a truthful representation. So going back to the statement, I do find it interesting. It does kind of tip the hand of, I guess, the ending of the documentary in, like, you know, the trailer asks the question, is this Vince McMahon the person or is it Vince McMahon the character? And Vince is basically saying that the conclusion of the documentary says that Vince McMahon and Mr. McMahon are one and the same, to which Vince McMahon disagrees. This also seems to be like, in a way, his defense. He is standing by maybe a lot of what he's accused for being the character of Mr. McMahon instead of who he genuinely is. And immediately, like, it's the Terry Bollea defense, right? And immediately, I think that reads really poorly. Again, we'll have to see the documentary. It's true that we have not heard Vince's side yet on all of this. But if it's anything along the lines of, that's the Mr. McMahon character, I'm Vince McMahon, I don't think it'll play very well to the public.
Do you expect Vince McMahon to speak further after the series comes out in any capacity?
Maybe if pressed, maybe depending on how big all of this gets coming out of it. I'm assuming we're not going to get much statement beyond what the point of this statement was. So I'm
to put more attention on the documentary series is what the unintended effect of this will have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So shortly after this statement was released on Monday evening, Ann Callis, the lawyer for Janelle Grant, issued her own statement. And we will read that as well. This was sent out. Vince McMahon physically and emotionally abused, sexually assaulted, and human trafficked Janelle Grant for more than 2 years. Calling his horrific and criminal behavior unfair is delusional and nothing more than a sad attempt to save his shredded reputation. Although Ms. Grant has not seen the Mr. McMahon docuseries, we hope it shines a bright light on his abhorrent and criminal actions by accurately portraying the realities of his abusive and exploitative behavior. Ms. Grant will no longer be silenced by McMahon. Her story, though deeply troubling and exceptionally painful, is one that can help other abuse survivors find their voices. We seek to hold McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and WWE accountable and to give Ms. Grant her day in court.
Pretty standard response you would expect from Ann Callis, and maybe just, you know, again, like with the press conference last week, using this opportunity to get their side of the story out there, or at least their intent of publicizing, you know, the lawsuit and you know, what they want people to focus on as it relates to the Janelle Grant lawsuit.
And I have no doubt from the press conference last week and doubling down in this statement, Janelle Grant is going to speak at some point. I have no doubt about that. I think they're making it very clear that on her timetable, Janelle Grant will speak about this. And I think the fact that you're like, it was said over and over in the press conference, she will, like, I think it was literal and figurative about her having her day in court, but getting her story out there on her time and being one that can help other abuse survivors. I think, like, you will hear from Janelle Grant at some point.
So the lawsuit is on hold right now, but that doesn't prevent them from speaking to the public about it.
Right. They are not. There's no. I mean, they are on a stay right now. So, I mean, there are limitations in terms of what you can do in terms of building your case. But they are not under a gag order. Like, they are. Okay. They, like, Janelle Grant could have taken part in this Netflix series if she had chosen to. Vince McMahon obviously did. Right. And they're free to speak. It might be advised by their counsel not to speak, but there's nothing preventing them from talking about this.
Okay. Well, yep. The topic will be front and center, and we'll see what sort of editing tricks might be employed. How hilarious Vince McMahon, the person who's made a career out of embellishing and exaggerating the truth in every little statement, the attendance figures, certainly, like, somebody brought up here the Ultimate Warrior DVD complaining this man.
Screwed the Bret Hart story.
Yeah. These producers use typical editing tricks with out of context footage.
I know all these tricks.
Yes. Right. Okay. Well, we'll see.
It's going to be a very much discussed series that's coming out this Wednesday. All right. Tony Khan was on WFAN today, and he spoke a little bit about the Max streaming service and gave some indication about the potential of seeing AEW content appearing on Max.
The plan is to, I think, do a lot of things potentially with Max, and that could involve a variety of things. But we have the shows on TBS and TNT, right, and that's how they're available now. But I think there's, in, you know, as far as the, you know, Dynamite, Collision, Rampage, pay-per-views, everything's on the table. Look, you can get the pay-per-views other places for now, but we're working on some exciting announcements about where to get those and what's to come with Max. But I've said it before and I'll say it again, I can promise you that I'm 100% confident that you're going to have AEW on TBS and TNT for a long time to come.
So, and this comes on the heels of a report from Andrew Zarian at the Matt Men podcast that the deal will include pay-per-views, at least in the U.S., moving to Max either in January or slightly before that. What that means on an international scale remains to be seen, because that would be a pay-per-view distribution in the U.S., those that do have Max itself. So, yeah, that could also be dropping anytime this week. I mean, it was stated last week by John Olrand. It could come as early as this week. So that could be another bit. Then I outlined today in my news update just the next 2 weeks. There are some very big things coming from the rights deal. This Mr. McMahon series is going to be very notable. You have Grand Slam. We have the five-year anniversary for AEW, the CW move for NXT, a head-to-head with Dynamite in NXT in 2 weeks' time. Like, there is a lot coming up over these next 2 weeks of significance.
Yeah, yeah. And even towards the end of the year, just the move to Netflix alone, I think, is going to be a huge, 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 huge thing. So never.
And Raw to 2 hours. I mean, we're 2 weeks away from that move.
Yes, that's right.
WrestleMania 41 tickets, they announced today there will be a pre-sale October 23rd and then a general on-sale date of October 25th through Ticketmaster for next April's event on April 19th and 20th at Allegiant Stadium. This, of course, they are getting a $5 million grant by the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority among the perks that are coming with WrestleMania going to Las Vegas. It comes at an exceptionally hot period for the company, and I'm really curious to see how strong these first day ticket sales are for the 2 night event.
Do we have any idea how much the tickets will cost yet?
They're going to be enormous. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I think so.
Sizable gates they're going to be going for both nights at Allegiant Stadium. SmackDown week 2 on the USA Network. Maybe settling into an audience that we can expect on a more routine basis. They were down from the season premiere, 1,494,000 viewers and a 0.45 in the 18 to 49 demo. So viewership was down 13%. The demo was down 18%, but was number one in primetime on cable, even beating out the college football game. And they were going up against a massive game on Fox. So now SmackDown is at odds with Fox on Friday nights, fighting for number one on television. But this game on Fox did 4.2 million viewers and a 1.05 in the 18 to 49. So Fox is certainly not reeling from the loss of pro wrestling on Friday nights, at least through December. And then Rampage, bit of a surprise. This was their best audience since July 12th and their highest 18 to 49 audience since March the 8th. They did 327,000 viewers and a 0.12 in 18 to 49. The demo audience was up like over 60% this week. It was up a gigantic figure. And they were sixth in primetime on cable behind SmackDown, college football, and three programs on Fox News. And obviously, you promote a four-way with Nick Wayne on Dynamite the Wednesday before. It's a recipe for Rampage success.
Do you have any thoughts about why? Why the improvement?
I have not seen like the quarters for this. I cannot explain this one. It did not have anything out of the ordinary for Rampage. Like, this was a standard show. Like, you know, Mark Briscoe had a really good match with Brian Keith, but is anyone tuning in for Brian Keith and Mark Briscoe or this four-way match? I couldn't say. But something clicked. I can't give you a great answer why this did so well out of the blue. But we had a several month high in both figures.
Okay.
And the last thing is Grand Slam coming up on Wednesday night. They have surpassed 6,000 tickets out, and we will see what this last push is like over the final, well, less than 48 hours now. But we do have lineups for both Dynamite on Wednesday and Collision Saturday that they are all taping Wednesday. So the live show on Wednesday will include Jon Moxley against Darby Allin in the number one contenders matches. This is a lot of matches announced for Arthur Ashe Stadium. Young Bucks against Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher for the tag titles. Mariah May versus Yuka Sakazaki for the women's title. Prince Nana will give an update on Swerve Strickland. And if he is cleared, Bryan Danielson will face Nigel McGuinness in a non-title match.
Mm-hmm.
That boy, they were keeping the cards close to the vest for that closing segment on Collision Saturday. Awesome promo from Nigel McGuinness, but Tony Schiavone like explaining, listen, this guy is not scared of you. He's just not cleared. That's the only reason he can't wrestle you. Yeah. I mean, it was this has been a very an interesting promotion of this match. Maybe you'll get it, maybe you won't.
I mean, I think it's exactly the playbook they've used for CM Punk, you know, for the First Dance. And who else am I thinking of that they tried this with? Mercedes, you know. They're basically telling you that it's happening, but they want to set up, you know, the big pop for the surprise. I wouldn't be surprised if they kept this for the main event, you know, at least
I think they will now that they've added this mystery. I would argue the difference though is that had they done that Darby tease with CM Punk and you had sold 7,000 tickets at the Allstate Arena in an arena that could hold, where were they? Was it the United Center that they were at?
I think it was the United
Center. Like, if they had sold 7,000-8,000 tickets and they had several thousand remaining, would they have still kept it a secret with CM Punk? Like, it was great. It sold out immediately based on just the you didn't have to promote it. It was sold out. People knew what they were expecting.
Are you suggesting that if they explicitly told you Bryan Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness was happening on the show, that they would have seen a significant bump?
I'm arguing that I don't think there's any benefit to this way of doing things.
Well, their benefit is that we can bypass the logic of Darby Allin not getting the title shot.
Okay.
And to build the pop for, like, you know, the quote-unquote surprise appearance.
Maybe they should not deliver it to people. Maybe he comes out and Brie runs out and says, you're not cleared.
Maybe we'll get... Sorry, guys. What's the dude's name who partnered with Kevin Owens?
Ricky?
Yeah, maybe Ricky will come out to face Nigel.
Okay, that's all possible. Yeah. And then the Collision portion will include the Lumberjack strap match between Jeff Jarrett and Hangman Page, Hook and Roderick Strong for the FTW title, Kazuchika Okada and Sammy Guevara in an eliminator bout, Saraya against Jamie Hayter in a Saraya's Rules match, and the Learning Tree against Orange Cassidy, Mark Briscoe, and Kyle O'Reilly. That is our current lineup. And whatever they do with the trios belts, if they're going to have the BCC defend them.
We got this three-way Lucha Libre match with Beast Mortos Hologram and Dralístico as well.
Okay.
Happening on Collision. So,
okay.
Maybe a bunch more matches to be announced as well. But yeah, I mean, Collision's looking like a really good card. You know, Dynamite already looks like they all look really good.
I think you're going to get two great shows out of this. And yeah, I guess the curiosity will be over these next 2 days of if, like, do you. Could they hit 8,000 way?
Yeah.
You think so? Okay.
Sure. Why not?
Well, we'll find out on Wednesday. We will be live after Dynamite, so tune in Wednesday evening for that. And before we get to Raw, want to also make mention that on Tuesday, We have got not just Up Next with Brayden and Davey, but a new edition of Postmarks that is going to be dropping from Bruce Lord and David Myers.
Yeah, Postmarks is our show hosted by David Myers and Bruce Lord, where they interview listeners of the post-wrestling audience. I've loved every single edition that these guys have done of that. We're on, I think, episode number 36 now, and we'll be talking, or they'll be talking to Cody from Maine, who is also a professional Twitch streamer. Streaming video games, I believe, like maybe with a slant towards sports video games. So you might be very interested in listening to this, John. You know, 90s sports game aficionado, as you might be. So I'll be very curious to listen to it in full. I've already started listening to it. They're great interviewers, and if you ever want to maybe see, understand or listen to some of the people that might listen to these podcasts in our community, well, Postmarks tomorrow and the Post Wrestling Cafe feed for free for everybody.
All right. All of that and more coming your way. The full schedule. And it's a packed one this week. Postwrestling.com. And, of course, our Mr. McMahon reviews with Way and I begin this Friday. Episode one will be free. And then postwrestlingcafe.com for the rest.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
We move on to Raw at the Toyota Arena in a sold-out Ontario, California, 86-12, last note from WrestleTix. And tonight, going up against not one, but two NFL games. They were up against the Bills and Jaguars and the Washington Commanders and Cincinnati Bengals. So a lot of football to contend with tonight. We get the arrivals at the beginning, including Dominic and Liv, who show up in a lowrider. And little did we know that this was a product placement, that to promote the new Mattel Lucha lowrider that is available in stores now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess like when you're trying to sell toys to kids, I mean, I know this from experience now, kids, little boys especially, really love vehicles. So, like, they come up with these ridiculous reasons to attach vehicles to, like, professional wrestling. Like, remember we had, like, some sort of, like, weird ATV, like, an ambulance, I believe they were trying to sell that, like, they tried to incorporate in, like, a Braun Strowman thing. And I guess this is our latest, is the Lucha Lowrider that actually comes with a Rey Mysterio figure, not even Dominic.
Oh, man.
But it's a lowrider where you can launch your opponents into the air with.
Okay.
So, you know, this was great synergy.
Wow. This toy looks a lot worse than how they presented it on TV. Like this. Do you think Oscar would enjoy this toy?
Oh, he would. He'd love it. He'd love anything with wheels. Yeah, he would love it.
Okay. They replayed. First of all, as Liv and Dominic are walking in, we cut to Strowman and Bronson, who crashed through a merchandise table. So they picked up where they left off last week, and Dom and Liv pass by walking into the arena, and they replay last week's closing attack on Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. Rhea storms out. She's wearing a knee brace, but walking totally fine. Liv says that maybe Dom would have stayed with you if you cared about him half as much as you care about Priest. And Rhea has an announcement. Liv thinks she's not cleared for bad blood. It's like, oh, this, what a hook. Tune into Bad Blood. Find out if she's cleared. But Rhea's like, no, this is promotion 101. She flat out said, I'm cleared. So I will be there at Bad Blood on that date. Buy your tickets now. Liv says that she's going to beat Rhea because I'm smarter than you. And Rhea informs them that not only is she cleared, but the reason she is here is because she has conferred with Adam Pearce, and that because Dominic has gotten involved in all of their matches, including Liv winning the title, Dom will go behind bars once again and be placed in a shark cage, which I'm sure will be another Mattel release before Christmas.
Pretty sure they've already sold that, actually. They probably
in the past, but maybe a Dominic-inspired shark cage. Yeah. So Dominic, of course, freaks out about this, and Rhea headbutts Liv to end the segment, and Wei says it is dehumanizing to put Dominic inside of a cage.
Right. Dehumanizing, sure. But great for entertainment. So let the dehumanizing begin. I think, like, you know, blank on a pole matches, they've already made the graphic. Look at this. The blank on a pole matches are like any sort of like suspending of a thing or a human being, you know, Judy Bagwell on a crane, whatever. Like they often can be very comedic and silly, and this will probably have a huge element of that. But I think it's just about the perfect stipulation for this particular story, for where they're at right now. It is the perfect type of gimmick to showcase a chicken shit heel manager, of which Dom pretty much is for Liv Morgan right now. The reactions will be immense from the moment they lock Dom in to the moment they raise him up. And I mean, it almost makes me wish, like, when they did the custody of Dominic match, that they suspended little boy Dominic up in a cage then, so we can have this as a callback. But, you know, with the whole jail thing, I think it works out really well, too.
Yeah, nothing like traumatizing a child to get your SummerSlam angle over to that next level.
Yeah, they can do a custody of Dominic maybe after this one, too.
Sami Zayn and Ludwig Kaiser. Zayn is balancing himself on the guardrail when he gets shoved into the timekeeper's area. They go through the break. Kaiser runs around the ring with a seated dropkick into the step. Zayn breaks the count, and then Kaiser is caught using the rope for leverage. So Zayn lands the exploder. Then, as he goes up for another haluva, Kaiser cuts him off with the enziguri, and we get a near fall from Kaiser. Zayn counters the DDT and uses a German suplex, finally hitting the haluva kick on the third try, and wins in 12 minutes and 20 seconds. Big pop for the finish, and immediately Gunther storms down, and he's in his trunks. He's ready to go. He's seen enough, and he thinks Ontario is the right place for it. Tonight is the right time to step up to you and tell you no. And he just laughs. He thought this was the greatest prank, and Wade Barrett calls him a comedic genius for the pregnant pause and getting everyone's hopes up before he turned down Sami Zayn. And Zayn sold this like he was just crushed.
I'm with Wade. This man is a comedic genius. Who would have thought that
he
this man
came all the way to Ontario, California with this prank in mind?
Yeah, like, did not come out in a suit, came out in wrestling gear, like, just to put on his tights just to troll. This man is a comedic genius. I love it. I love it when a giant can, like, you know, showcase a sense of humor. The outcome of this match, I thought, was incredibly predictable. It wasn't supposed to be much more than, you know, like Ludwig Kaiser playing a setup guy for Sami Zayn. But that clearly had no effect on this Ontario crowd. They were treating this and reacting to this match at the near falls like it was a pay-per-view match. And I thought it ended up being a tremendous showcase of Ludwig Kaiser, who is such a great classic heel. You know, on the microphone, you can almost, like, feel like the character is straight out of the 80s. And I mean that in the best ways. Like, he's so committed to playing this sort of over-the-top delivery type of, like, foreign heel. And when it comes to the in-ring, he does so many, like, classic heel schticks that are all incredibly effective, especially against a babyface as, I think, pure as Sami Zayn. So this was, like, a very classic, I think, slower pace but very effective style of match. And I came out of this incredibly impressed with Kaiser, feeling like he's certainly ready for, like, a mid-tier title program, somebody that I could even see as a future championship guy, and maybe even as a babyface, like, with some of the right tweaks, because he's really entertaining me at the moment.
Kofi Kingston meets up with Xavier Woods, and Woods explains that last week emotions were high, and they agree it's water under the bridge after their argument, and Kingston, with the anniversary of the New Day coming up, dug up some old boxes of bootios and the trombone. And Wood said, you know, all this stuff was fine when we were on top, but we haven't been champs in like 3 years. Maybe we need to be a bit more serious. And Kofi said, you know, Xavier, there was a time once when I was very serious, when I lost my championship and I balled up my fist and I got very serious for a moment, but then I decided, Let's leave well enough alone. And that was the end of my seriousness. Kofi explains that You know what, Xavier? I've been calling the shots for a while. Why don't you be the quarterback? And Woods is going to be leading the team for the next few weeks. So I'm sure this is going to turn their fortunes around and everything's going to just go smoothly from now on.
I think you'd be wrong on that, okay. John. Yeah, I think that would end the storyline prematurely.
American made over here.
Dude, the best part of the segment was at the end of it, a PA walks in with a giant stack of pancakes as they used to. And Kofi just looks at him and just waves him off without Woods ever the wiser. So I mean, this is to me showcasing like I think, at least a bit more of a refined and actually more effective, you know, style of comedy than I think we've seen, certainly at the very low level that these sort of backstage skits tend to be at. They went through the effort of like making all these pancakes just for this sort of like little psych gag at the end of it. And I thought it was hilarious. Yeah, I think the storyline is progressing really well. You know, now that they've kind of freed themselves from the whole Karrion Kross of it all, it's now taken a much more serious and like captivating turn. They're having, like, Xavier Woods give us, I think, the appropriate reaction that you would expect of somebody who's just not been successful and suddenly wants to get serious, doesn't want to play with the bootios, doesn't want to play with the pancakes anymore. And it's arguably maybe the most interesting character Woods has ever had.
Yeah, I did not think that we would see a segment with these two where the letter O would be repeated again.
Oh, yes.
American made overhear this, and Gable tells the Creeds to never become has-beens like these two. And Woods gets into Gable's face and leads to a challenge that Gable accepts. And Brutus has now taken on this high-pitched voice and laughter that he incorporates into his matches. And I guess that's our calling card for Brutus now.
Yeah, he kind of introduced it in the video last week. I mean, I tend to think it's a little bit Jim Neidhart inspired, and I think it's great for him. You know, big guy who doesn't really talk much, but like has this very distinctive laugh. It makes you remember him. No,
sure. Why not? Got to find something for Julius now. Maybe maybe his voice cracks when he talks.
We'll see.
Would that be something for him? So. Yes, and this is when the pancake showed up, and it was a good sight gag here. So Jey Uso video his mission for the IC title, which would be the main event. Dom and Liv complain to Adam Pearce about the shark cage, says he's traumatized from being behind bars. Pearce doesn't care and is called Mr. Potato Head. So JD and Carlito enter. Tonight Carlito is going to put Dragon Lee away once and for all. After all this time, we're finally getting the end of Carlito and Dragon Lee tonight. And Liv informs them, go teach LWO a lesson. So as JD and Carlito walk off, they run into Ilya Dragunov. And JD threatens him, but Ilya knows you're not going to do anything without Finn Balor here tonight. And he calls their bluff, and they just walk by. And Ilya, I don't know where he was headed, but he walked to the left, and we never saw him again.
Maybe they needed him for a video package or something. Maybe he sat down to be interviewed. Yeah, I don't know. They're doing a bit of a slow burn here with, you know, teasing Dragunov's feud with, I'm guessing, like, he's going to feud
all
with
of them way. He's going to start with Carlito.
They're saving
work his way up.
Who are they saving for? They're saving Finn Balor for Priest, obviously. So I guess Dragunov gets the B team of the Judgment Day.
Dragon Lee against Carlito, finally. We get a tope suicida from Dragon Lee right away. They remind us that Carlito was the one who took Dragon Lee out of WrestleMania this year. JD distracts Lee, and Dominic jumps wild. Del Toro gets thrown into the post, so Ray pops out of nowhere with a seated senton off the barricade to Dom, leading to Dragon Lee with a schoolboy. Carlito kicks out, and then he is hit with Operation Dragon in 2 minutes and 18 seconds. As Joe Tessitore called it, Operation Dragon Lee, which, sure, we can add his last name to it as well. Doesn't win with it too often. Doesn't win, period, too often. But he got the big blow-off feud ender with Carlito. After all this time, they got into the ring, they all celebrated, and that's how Raw went off the air.
I believe they last had a match in June. Oh, when was the turn? When was the actual turn?
Shortly after WrestleMania.
Okay, so they had the match in June. Now I think they might be one of
these. I think they can get a whole year out of this. Easy.
I think you can get a best of seven out of this, sure. It was fine. It was good use of rate to heighten the crowd. Didn't overstay its welcome. It was perfectly
fine. Carlito's one match a month.
Mm-hmm.
Karrion Kross, Way's favorite, meets with The Miz to make sure he's ready to face Bronson Reed. And Karrion Kross is gaslighting this dude. Says, it's messed up that people don't respect you. And Miz is suspicious of Kross. And
is that gaslighting?
I mean, he's giving him a false sense of security here. Like, this guy's about to get mauled, and no one thinks highly of him. So,
well, he's about to get mauled, though.
He says he just wants to see The Miz go out there and be himself. Monsters come in all shapes and sizes. And Miz is like, yeah, yeah. And some great depth here to the characters of these two and what's informing their motivations.
I think it's the second week we've had of this sort of interaction, maybe even third. I mean, it's hard to keep track at this point, but this is moving at a very slow pace. And I'm not saying it's not doing much to maybe stay in my memory following these shows. So what are they teasing here? I mean, obviously they're teasing, like, you know, Kross manipulating Miz and Miz maybe somehow using it to play into the dark side to set up some sort of heel turn. But the specific wording of this is what? Monsters come in all sizes. So are we going to see like a monster version of Miz? Like, we're going to see Demon Miz?
Yes.
Like a great Muda version of
yes,
Miz?
Yes, I want the Muda version of Miz. Great. Okay. Miz.
Amazing. I can't wait. That sounds awesome.
We got some celebrities. Adam Jones from Tool was there. Drew McIntyre walks out. What? What? I don't have much to say.
I know. It's just so funny.
He made sure for us to see his Gibson shirt that he was wearing.
It sounded casting shade at the on the.
I'm not casting shade. I just
we got some great celebrities here.
I wasn't even trying.
Adam Jones from Tool.
Would you have gone up and said hi to him if you were three seats away?
I'm actually not a big Tool fan either. I don't think I would have recognized him.
Okay, so there you go. Drew McIntyre is out for a very short promo, but an effective one. He goes over Punk's promises made last week to make Drew bleed and how he's willing to die. He knows Punk meant every word that he said, and for once you were being real, stating you would sacrifice everything. Well, I have always spoken the truth, and I'll lay it out. I don't want to go back into hell in a cell. I have broken things in me that have never been fixed to this day, which is legitimate. He has talked about that back injury he has had that he has not gotten fixed since the last Hell in a Cell. His family has begged Drew not to do this. His wife has begged him to get away from Punk for months because of what he's doing to him mentally. But this match is happening. He is making his own promises. He will make Punk bleed a lot. He will make him suffer and feel more pain than he's ever felt in his existence. You are not a godlike figure. You're just a man that's broken so easily in the past, and I will break you permanently inside Hell in a Cell. And this was WWE has these patterns of these promos where it's like you kind of just go through this kind of wave and you build to the crescendo and this one just ends. And I thought it was really effective. Like, this was not your super long droning on promo. There was no interruption. It's just a quick message in and out. And I thought it was really good. I think they're peaking this program very well. Mm-hmm. You do your go home segment next week and then we're at the match. I think they've really done a great job making this Hell in a Cell feel like this is not just going to be the blow off, but this is going to be super violent.
Mm. I think pacing has been one of the biggest strengths of this entire program. We're talking about a program that began in January of this year, and they're taking it pretty much through almost an entire calendar year. And for much of that time, not even having an active wrestler be a part of the entire thing. So I think pacing has been a really real strong suit of this entire thing. And I mean, this is no different as they reach, you know, what will probably be, at least for a long time, the final chapter. I thought this was almost like a direct mirroring of CM Punk's promo last week. That was also just very sort of like almost somber in delivery and very serious. Drew McIntyre, who comes out and usually like wisecracks at least like once or twice, got none of that here. This was just all various Drew walking closer and closer and closer to the camera lens. I mean, he was really filling, you know, this entire camera with his face here. And, I guess if effective when you're trying to be intense, you walk right up to the camera and get a super, super, super close up.
Then we had Jackie Redmond with Adam Pearce
We might have skipped something.
Yes.
Yeah. Sheamus did a thing with Butch. It's not that important.
We missed the Miz and Bronson Reed, that whole thing here. So first, let's go in this order here. We have a shot in the front row of all the Netflix employees that have shown up for Raw.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's coming up on Netflix this week? Nothing. No new programming at all. They have a week off and they came to enjoy it with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty interesting.
So bizarre. Catch the Queen of Villains. Your lone wrestling content on Netflix. Then Kathy is with Sheamus. And her question, after Pete Dunne hit you with a cricket bat last week, are you done with Pete? Which, other than the play on words, I thought was a hilarious question. Yeah, after he drove you over with a car, are you done with him? And Sheamus states, you know, there's something that I think he hates being called. And he realizes, you know why this isn't catching on? It's not a chantable name. We need it to be a phrase. And he says, call him Butch. Call him Butch. And about five people repeated him and then stopped. And he has a score to settle with Dunn. There is no one more dangerous than an Irishman. And he is going to make this a, quote, English versus Irish thing, Butch.
Mm-hmm.
So call him Butch. This man is the most stubborn character in this whole company. He will not give up on this Butch thing that nobody is following suit with.
Yeah. I think it just goes to show you the lack of depth they actually have for this entire feud, where the only thing that they really have to rely on, and a thing that clearly is not taking off in the way that they want it to, is to try to get the audience to call him Butch. I guess Butch is not that chantable. Butch. Yeah, maybe not as fun. But are the audience, like, call him Butch is not that much fun to chant either. None of this is fun because they know the audience at this point either just doesn't care or they just know that they're being manipulated. And I don't know, you got to call him Bitch or something like that.
He's done that in the matches. We
got to encourage the entire crowd to chant Bitch. That would be maybe a bit more novel and fun.
Well, we can we'll see how that one works out. The Miz and Bronson Reed doesn't get started because as Reed is on his way to the ring, Braun leaps off the barricade, attacking Reed, and they just go into their latest video game battle with Braun chokeslamming him on the edge. Miz then gets into Braun's face, asks what he's doing, and Reed hits both with tope suicidas, and then the security army just unloads. They must have hired every indie worker in Southern California for tonight's segment. They were all laid out. Half of them were trying their best to bump or have the most ridiculous facial expressions with the intent of getting a callback.
Oh, guaranteed one of these guys that we saw tonight are going to be a future main eventer in this company. And we're going to see some documentary in 20 years time that says, I got my start getting tsunamied on a pile.
Yeah.
By Bronson Reed.
I'll promise you how they're not going to get hired is an official taking one of them aside and stating, hey, you know, when Braun was about to wind up and you contorted your face to look like someone just farted, that was a really great reaction. And I think we got to get you down on paper.
I didn't notice that.
There were some funny attempted stand-up comedians here. They just murdered these security guys. I didn't get tired of this. And at the end, Strowman teased a dive to the floor, but Reed held himself off, and we got the announcement that next week, a last monster standing match in the only location possible for the last monster standing, Evansville, Indiana.
Sure, yes. City known for its monsters. I thought this was so great. This continues to be one of the highlights of all of the WWE. You know, these are just, there's just so much fun because they're just like bombarding you with stimulation. you know, and like things that are you've never seen before. It's like giants just like causing chaos, you know, from the beginning of the show when they had them interrupt the walk-in to everything you saw here. It's just the energy just kind of hits you completely unexpectedly, and they just keep the pace so high. They continue to make these feel like one of the highlights of the show, and at this point they've not only done a great job of continuing to build Bronson Reed, but they've also made Braun Strowman into, I would say, like maybe the most compelling and most over character he's been in maybe since, like, you know, what is it? One of these, like, these, the Get These Hands era with, like, you know, Alexa Bliss and all that. So I think they've really just outdone themselves. I mean, especially with Braun Strowman, who I think has done a tremendous job of committing to all of this as well. Like, I get the sense he wasn't supposed to be anything more than just like a 1 or 2 week, you know, program for Reed and before Reed moves on to another thing. But he's really kind of turned this into something that's been a huge push for him too. So they were teasing the superplex into the ring, and they didn't give it to us. I think there's a good chance we might see the ring break next week to close the show. If you see the match in the main event, I would almost bet on it.
It is a tried and true favorite for them.
Yeah.
Then Jackie is with Pierce, and this is where he makes the announcement of the match with Braun and Reed for next week. But then he hears chaos in the background, and he runs to find Pete Dunne choking Sheamus with my new favorite weapon, the wooden cricket bat, as he yells, "Don't call me Butch."
Man,
god damn. They've got to have a match where it's like if Pete loses, he's got to revert to Butch.
I think the only way they might get the audience to actually chant Butch is like maybe if they use reverse psychology. Like what if Dunn actively encouraged everybody to call him, I don't know.
Peter.
You got it. Like, in order for chants like this to feel like they're fun, the audience has to feel like they're doing something they're not supposed to. And I think everything they've done so far has been such clear direction that they want the audience to do, so that it's not really rebellious nor fun.
The Unholy Union against Damage Control. Wade calls the Unholy Union a team that has dominated the world.
Which
world is he talking about? A separate one than the one we occupy.
Typically, I think to an American, or at least like to an American audience, anything outside of the U.S. is considered the world. So the fact that they've had success anywhere outside of the U.S. means that they've dominated the rest of the world.
Well, they've been able to break down a lot of barriers. They can at least hang their hat on the fact they are the only union in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Joe Tessitore reminds us, not that we needed reminding, that the Unholy Union beat Damage Control on September 2nd.
Yes, I remember that.
Feels like yesterday. Damage Control are in the back when Belair and Jade Cargill, who have pretty much just subtly turned, and
I just don't know if this was supposed to be the case. I totally agree with you.
They've been doing this for like several weeks now, where they're getting more cocky, and I think it's just an assumed turn without doing something dramatic.
I don't think that would make any sense at all. Like, there's no real reason for them to turn heel. I think they've just always been consistently cocky. In fact, that was sort of my complaint about, like, their build with the Unholy Union for their match. Never once have they ever shown any sort of vulnerability, despite having lost to the Unholy Union and like, you know, challenging them again for the championships. You've never seen any sort of, like, I'm nervous about this. This is going to be a big obstacle for me. No, like, they've always just said, thanks for keeping our titles warm. We're going to take them back. And they did take them back. This was almost a different level, though, of cockiness. Like, this was very dislikable cockiness from Bianca Belair. And this is somebody who lost to Io Sky. So, you know, a babyface would typically, like, maybe show respect, you know, and be like, hey, I'm determined to, like, beat you again. This was Belair just, though, I think giving more of a, I would say, like, overly confident, and almost to a fault type of, like, reaction. So, I think the intent is to continue to push, Damage Control, you know, as babyfaces, which has been effective. But, it almost seems to me a bit like a character shift for Belair and Jade that I wonder if it's intentional or not.
Yeah, so Belair talks about the two having one of the matches for the ages last week and asks EO, listen, whenever you want to run it back, We can, but it's not going to happen next week. And says the next time, EO says, the two of us are coming for your tag titles. And Jade says, you won't touch our titles. And Belair says, you better focus on the unholy union because you lost last time. So out they come. And Joe Tessitore mentions, if you heard on Busted Open or any of the industry podcasts, they were all stating that Belair and EO was one of the best women's matches of the year.
Right. Well, who are the industry podcasts that Joe Tessitore is listening to?
I don't know. I don't know what's on his playlist.
Okay. All right. Well, there are a lot of them out there. I'm sure a lot of people said that.
This was also Kairi Sane's birthday.
Is that right? And her return match. All right. Well, happy birthday to her.
Yes. She got cleared on her birthday. They go through a commercial break, and they have the advantage on Sane. Fire is choking her behind the referee's back, going after the injured eye of Kairi. Eventually makes the tag to Sky, who hits the springboard into a double missile dropkick. Crowd is cheering a lot for Sky, hits the double knees. And then Dawn lands a cheap shot from the floor, leads to a roll-up for two. And then they finish as Sane hits an insane elbow to Fire on the floor while EO executes the over-the-moonsault, pinning Isla Dawn. I thought EO was the clear standout of the four in this match, especially when she got her tag. But there you have it. Damage control win. They're baby faces. The champions are heels. The Unholy Union are, they're still dominating the world. They don't win.
Yeah. I don't know if the champions are heels. Like, I remain, you know, maybe somewhat skeptical that this was actually a heel turn. But we'll see. We'll see. The match was, I thought, very good. EO, I think, is doing some of the most impressive work she's ever done on the main roster. It feels like we're finally seeing her unleashed, and it's not just on pay-per-views now, it's like every match. You know, last week's match really came out of nowhere, and I'm so glad to see the reception that that match received, because I mean you would assume that they want more of that now from Io Sky on every sort of TV show, and she looked like a standout, impressive performer here. Yeah, it's working out for them. Her English promo, she's getting more and more chance to speak as well. And I think she's sounding pretty good doing it too. So EO is, in my opinion, like getting really hot as a character right now.
Kathy Kelly interviews Bron Breakker. It's game day. And that means the dogs are barking in Ontario. And there will be a winner.
That's like his, you know, finally the Rock has come back to blank.
The town. Dogs are barking in Ontario.
Yeah.
Says there will be a winner and a loser. Someone's going to get their ass kicked. It won't be mine. And maybe one day, Jay, I'll give you another title shot because I'm going to be the champ for a long time. They had time and they put enough resources into it that we got the full replay of Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns going to Georgia Tech. Zayn gave words of encouragement to Jay Uso before.
We also had a bit of a teaser going to commercial break with a new video of a ring of fire that, and the words "fate is woven," and this looks like it might be the Viking Raiders setup. The markings look similar to their shields. So,
okay, well, we had a few of these things that sent.
Oh,
you
a lot of video production
some,
on this.
Some yeah. homework we'll get to.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MCU Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
The New Day against the Creeds. So Tessitore makes a very impassioned speech about why the New Day should be the tag champions now. And Wade explains, but they're not. It's a murky industry. Which might be some headlines on Thursday.
Okay.
They double team Brutus. Kofi flips off of Woods' back and lands on the top for a two count. Woods and Brutus exchange chops, and then Woods and Julius each hit superplexes. All four are down as they go through the break. Woods he hits a missile drop kick to stop Brutus, makes the tag to Kofi, and Kofi hits his trust fall to the floor, lands a trouble in paradise, but Woods wants the tag, so he makes the tag, and then it's Woods who gets caught up dealing with Chad Gable, and that leads to Julius capitalizing with a flying knee, and they hit the Brutus ball off the shoulders, and Brutus pins Xavier Woods 15 minutes and 27 seconds. So Xavier Woods, the quarterback fumbled.
He did, yeah. Match was excellent here. You know, New Day, throughout, like, I think, like, pretty poor creative over the past several years, the one thing that's been consistent about them is their in-ring. They're always good in-ring. But even this felt like a different level of smoothness from them. Kofi, I thought, was really on in this. And Woods finally has a bit of a different role and a lot more character motivation, and that's really helped, I think, his wrestling as well. He's playing the leader. He's also now playing the guy with the temper. So, maybe because of the story, I want to say, I felt a lot more engaged in this New Day match than usual.
It was like you have kind of gotten over the hump and you're moving towards like some kind of like the next big plot point in the story between these two of where it's going towards. And are they going to make it to this anniversary?
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry, I laughed because I just pulled up a still of like American Alpha doing their fist pose. And you look at the New Day doing like, essentially like sort of the, like the Nation of Domination fist pose.
Well, there you have it. Then we had Damian Priest, who had a question. Am I my brother's keeper? That was a saying that he used growing up. Because life can take you in some unexpected places, and life brought him to the Judgment Day, a family that gave him a brother in Finn Balor. They spoke of running WWE together, and they did, but Balor always wanted it to be about himself. While I was happy for Rhea, you had envy in your eyes, and then the same when I won the world title. Am I my brother's keeper? Damn right I am, but Balor is not my brother.
Mm-hmm. So he's somebody else's keeper.
Yeah, he's not Finn Balor's keeper.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a cool video. I don't know. There's just something about like Priest promos that don't necessarily connect with me. Like, there's nothing wrong, but nothing that really pops out either. How about you? What do you think?
Fine promo. I wouldn't say this Priest Balor match feels as though it's one of the big selling features of Bad Blood, of where we are with the right. The follow-up. But I think overall, Priest is, he's kind of settled into this role where I think he's like an upper mid-card babyface that they clearly are behind. I just don't know how much people are necessarily behind this program.
Well, the reactions are big for anything related to the Judgment Day, but you know, these are usually rolled into the Rhea segments. I mean, the Terror Twins and the Judgment Day breakup has been incredibly successful. But you know, there's definitely a lot more interest, I would say, in Rhea versus Liv with Dominic than there might be for Balor and Priest. But I mean, they're both pretty like strong programs, I would say.
Then it's the Wyatt video. So we go through, I am but dust, a worm, a rebel. You speak, we follow. And then we had the QR code. And I decided to go down.
Oh, you did? You did, eh? Oh, my.
I went through this, and one video plays. And a second video plays. And then the third video plays. I was like 8 videos in, and I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm leaving this to you way to go through and make sense of this. I got a backlash promo that was interrupted. I got some like hostage that was not a hostage that was insisting she was fine. What else do we have here? We had some dude playing 2K24 and then sees a ghost.
Yeah, there's a lot for you to unpack here. You know, they
I did not have time to unpack all this.
It was a combination of, I think, some of the videos we had already seen from like prior clues. Like this is essentially like their, I don't know, their archive, the Wyatt Six's archive,
the best
of all the videos that they've shot. But like a lot of new ones too, and I mean, like usual, they're incredibly cryptic and full of, I'm sure, a lot of meaning that, you know, the community hopefully can like get together to piece. Now, like with everything to do with like this current version of like the Wyatt Six and these QR codes, I'm not sensing as much buzz about the scavenger hunt as I did like the first time around with Bray Wyatt, and I mean, you know, because Bray Wyatt is, you know, that was probably the main reason, and also because it was fresh then. But this is all clearly leading to something. You know, they're laying the clues to remind you or to let you know that something is coming. And I haven't really dug into any sort of speculation about what it is yet. So they put a lot of
get to work, everyone.
Yeah, they put a lot of work in this. This is like a, you know, a new...
these are all well done. Like this is hours of work is what is represented here. But I'm not giving you hours of my time to decode all this.
So clearly it's not for you. No. It's for a different type of fan who, you know, really appreciates this stuff. This is like, you know, it's like a Nuit Blanche exhibit, this entire thing.
Yeah, okay. I'll be here at the end when you complete the marathon.
All right.
I'll be cheering everyone on.
One of the videos was promoting, or at least even the main one actually, was the words of the Red. So,
yes.
What is the Red?
Amazing.
You think he's the one behind all this?
Definitely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Red Green.
yeah, that's possible.
Red Green. CBC.
Yeah. Maybe it's that hit song by Chevelle.
Red. Right.
Yeah. Sexy
Red. She's in the universe.
Done. Okay, we've completed the puzzle.
I am but dust, a worm, a rebel. You cast your light of countenance upon me and I shall live. I think that might be one of her lyrics.
Definitely. Yes. I thought it would be Sexy Red. Yes. So either
solved it.
Amazing Red or Sexy Red, one of them. Okay.
Saved your time.
Okay. Then there was a video of the Pure Fusion Collective. This was much more straightforward. They're,
no clues.
Watching these back to back, where I literally spent like 12 minutes going through the last one. This one felt to me as dope. Okay, this one is for the beginners, and they just run through and says all these groups are designed for survival. They mock Caden Carter and Katana Chance, who we haven't seen in forever. We are the future of the division. Step up and shoot your shot with our font that came right out of, I think, my first word processor.
Yeah. Well, listen, the production on, like, everything they've been doing lately with their video packages has really been excellent. And I think what you're seeing right now over the past year is, like, Hunter's team from NXT getting to move up to the main roster. And we know that includes, like, a Jeremy Borash and a whole bunch of other people. Maybe we'll speak about later on with the video as well. That are getting to, like, move up and, like, use their skills to really advance these video packages way beyond what we used to get with Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn. And this video looked great. It was, I think, the coolest the Pure Fusion Collective have ever looked.
This reminded me of third year, where one of our projects was designing a title card, and this probably would have got a C.
Oh, the title card is shit. Yes, okay. But, like, the lighting is fantastic. Like, the way it's edited is fantastic, and, like, the way it looks is fantastic. It's almost too good for, I think, how unimpressive the faction has been so far and how little substance we've had from, like, the content of their promos and how shitty the name is and shitty the catchphrase is. So, I mean, no amount of, like, good-looking video, I think, is going to really help it. Like, they need a better name, okay? And they need PFC. A more interesting angle. Like,
or an angle.
Yeah, like, so what are they here for? They said, they're saying in the content of this promo, other factions were formed for survival. Like, okay, like, if you say so. Like,
are they under attack?
Were Chance and Carter formed to survive? Maybe, I don't know. But they claim that they were formed to dominate. And that just, like, is very generic. Like, you know, give me something specific. Like, you know, we're here to dominate. Yeah, I don't know. There's just not much mystery about it. Nor, like, I don't know. It feels kind of like, it feels like a after school version of, like, the BCC is what I think they're trying to go for. Like, we're a group of shooters, but, like, nowhere near the amount of mystery or, like, seriousness.
Well, they need a direction. That's what they need. They're putting some resources into them, but we need to have some kind of pathway. New Day are frustrated after the loss. So, irritated Xavier Woods is becoming much more of a favorite of mine. the LWO walk up, and led by Ray. They apologize for any misunderstanding last week. Xavier says, unless that apology comes with a tag title shot, you can go F off, pretty much. Ray is like, Jesus Christ. He says, you know, I'm just trying to help and give you some advice. And Xavier says, yeah, it's unsolicited advice. Maybe you should go give some of that to your son. And Ray says, you know, I got to focus on Finn Balor next week. And Woods just cracks. It's like someone called him Butch. He just gets so upset and says, why? You just care about Finn Balor because he's been a singles champion and Kofi's been a singles champion and I haven't been a singles champion. So the booker here, Ray, unbooks himself against Finn Balor and says, I'll face you next week. So that's how matchmaking works in Raw 2024. So the best line was Kofi just, Xavier's like, I was right, right? It was kind of unnecessary. So there you go. We got Ray and Woods next week.
Yeah, yeah. I'm loving this. I'm loving this Xavier Woods. I mean, you know, they're advancing this almost a little bit quicker than I expected, just given how long that Karrion Kross storyline dragged on for. They're really advancing this at a pretty fast pace, where now at this point, it's very clear that it's going to be Woods that's turning heel. And in fact, he already kind of already has. He's faced like Rey Mysterio next week. If that doesn't make you a heel, I don't really know what does. But it's, again, the most compelling. And you can, I think it's going to be the biggest role of Xavier Woods' career. You know, they are truly now advancing him to a level that I think is at the level where he's going to be the lead of the New Day. Like, I mean, not just, you know, because Kofi said so, but he's given the most storyline. He's going to be the one that might actually turn heel coming out of this, and therefore will probably have the most momentum and the most upside. So yeah, it's very, very compelling. And I think Woods is doing a good job.
And then my eyes were deceiving me when I saw Bronson Reed storming through the ocean into the city under attack, and he is met with Braun Strowman marching through the city, and the two men come to blows to promote this last Monster Standing match. This was the greatest match graphic video animation that this company has created. I am looking forward to this match next week.
This was so awesome.
They did this way in an hour.
Oh, very well. They have an amazing video team, of course.
How they got on top of this? But they knew that this has to be coming. Maybe let's get ahead of ourselves. We know this will be a match again.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. They shot this in advance. This one, though, in particular, felt very different in style from what they usually do. It felt very reminiscent of the Sean Ryan videos that he's done for OTT. And I don't know if he's still currently with the company or not, but this kind of had his imprints, his fingerprints all over it. Like, I believe, like, even these sort of kaiju shots were something he did specifically for Gunther or Walter, you know, in one of his videos. And, like, even down to this, like, sort of, like, graphic, it just felt very much of his style. So I wouldn't be surprised to maybe hear later on that he might have been heavily responsible for it. But it was just outstanding. They're making this match feel wonderful, wonderfully big. And, like, it's great to see, like, WWE experiment with, like, different types of video that, I mean, they've done, really, in NXT. Now we're just seeing it on the main roster.
Hey, listen, they're going there to own Evansville, Indiana. They're bringing you a show next week. So we got the last Monster Standing. Rey Mysterio against Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston versus Chad Gable next week. The main event, Bron Breakker and Jey Uso for the Intercontinental title. They teed up that Jey Uso is up next at around like 10:25. It was like so early. This match did not start till like 17 minutes to the hour. They did a lot of a preamble. And Joe Tessitore is pushing it hard. Jey has been 0-6 when challenging for singles titles. Will he break the streak tonight? And Braun is dominating this thing early, hits a backbreaker, but instead of going for the cover, he does push-ups. And Jey sees the opening, fights back, tries for a suicide dive. He's cut off. So Braun leaps off the apron, takes them over the desk. We get a second commercial break. Comes back, and Braun gets out of the way when Jey comes off the top. Jey's hit with a gut buster, but then Braun hits him with the no-hands Frankensteiner off the top, and then an overhead press into the power slam for a two count. So Braun runs around the ring, spears Jay, sends him into the ring for the follow-up, but this time it's Jay hitting the spear, and the crowd gets behind Jay. He goes for the Uso splash, lands it, and Braun kicks out. Huge reaction. They have the crowd at this point for the closing stretch, and Braun recovers and goes for the super spear on the floor, where he's going to hit like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future. He's just hitting the gas to hit that magic speed of 23 miles per hour. And Braun runs at Jay right into the super kick. And the crowd is going nuts here. Jay spears Braun through the timekeeper's area, sends Braun into the ring, hits another spear, and then the Uso splash, and Jay Uso unseats Braun Breaker and wins the Intercontinental title. We got a pyro display, and somewhere Rikishi is watching at home, realizing that they're booking Jay just fine.
What did he say?
Oh, this was he complaining? A while ago. He complained about something, and it was enough to generate a response from Jay. That was basically like, Dad, stop it.
Like, stop embarrassing me, Dad. Yeah, you know?
It's like, I'm good. Really picked up at the end. Like, this crowd got really heated at the end.
Well, it was I thought it was a great match, you know. Now, it was very, like, I guess it's just WWE main event style, where it's just, like, the heel, you know, pressuring, Jay fighting from behind the entire way. But I thought it worked. It was incredibly effective at building to, like, just this wonderful climax. One of the near falls that they had where, like, you know, Braun kicked out at 2.9, I thought was absolutely incredible. This was a bit of a surprising finish for me. Like, I thought Braun Breaker would hold on to this championship for a long, long time. And if he was going to lose it, I didn't necessarily think it would be on television. But you see the reaction that Jey Uso had tonight. And I really do think this was the right decision. You know, like, it cements him into, a highly successful upper tier mid-carder, if not even semi-main eventer. And I think that's exactly what the purpose of the IC title should be. It should be to elevate guys up into that sort of confirmed status, which, you know, it did for Braun Breaker, and it certainly has done for Jey Uso. I guess I just assume that they had more of a long-term, you know, story with Braun Breaker holding the championship, but who's to say that he can't win the title back, you know? Whether or not he does, tonight was the right night to give Jey Uso this championship win. He'll have this sort of, like, incredible reaction and incredible atmosphere attached to the rest of his career.
Yeah, I think Braun has, like, he feels like he's pretty cemented in his spot. And I, you know, there's, like, these titles, like, it's something where you can go back to him. Like, I think Braun is in a very strong position going forward, and this does give Jay sort of that singles identity as well. That I'll look at that.
And he got the pointed photo with Triple H. Yes.
So yeah, it was I wouldn't say like the most spectacular match, but by the closing stretch, like, this crowd was just going wild, and I think it was an outcome that probably not too many people going into tonight were anticipating. But I thought they did a good job with it.
The reactions were really, really tremendous for the end. And I don't think you could have asked for a better atmosphere for a person's first major singles title win. So my prediction is that, like, Braun wins it back. I just see them, like, just see him, like, having, like, a really long reign. But I also see, like, a way for Jay to somehow move on from holding the IC championship to whatever he's got going on with Sami Zayn and the Bloodline that doesn't necessarily demand, you know, that he have the IC championship. So we'll see how long this reign lasts. But again, tonight was the right night to do something like this. I thought this was another Raw that, like,
were you saying at the end, man, I'm going to miss one of these hours?
I'm not going to miss the extra hour, but I did not feel the weight of the 3 hours. They really have at this point, like, figured out how to book these 3 hour shows, in my opinion.
It takes you a decade or so to get there. But once you do, yeah.
We'll see. Maybe, like, we'll sit through these 2 hour Raws and we'll be like, you know what? This just didn't feel like it was enough.
I will 100% tell you that will never come out of my mouth. Maybe for you, Wei, but definitely not from me. I am counting down like it's New Year's coming in 2 weeks' time. I cannot wait for October 7th. But yes, to your point, I think that Raw is consistently, I think, the more substantive show that I think you get quite a lot of advancement with a combination of a lot of like great crowds. This was, I thought, a really red hot crowd that they had from the Sami Zayn Ludwig Kaiser match onward. Like you have like the Bronson Reed, Braun Strowman stuff generated that. Mm-hmm. Could have gone without the what chance for Drew McIntyre, but nonetheless, a really good promo from Drew McIntyre. And the main event delivered what it needed to. And I think the New Day story is really hooking people by this point, where you see it as more of a, it's sort of like not just beating around the bush of this. They got away from Karrion Kross is the best I can describe it.
Right. Yeah. I would say like overall, like this entire show, I think has like a lot of positive momentum in that they're really effectively building your new stars. Now, that's not to say there aren't weaknesses. There are still definitely duds in a 3-hour show that I don't think will make the cut.
We got Butch.
We got this Butch Sheamus thing, which they're still really trying hard to, like, you know, get over. Karrion Kross and The Miz are at their opening stages, but somehow I'm not too optimistic.
In fairness, those two examples took up about 90 seconds on tonight's show.
Yeah.
So anyway, there you go. That was Monday's edition of Raw, and we have some feedback to get to. Send in your super chats. You are welcome to do so.
Forum.postwrestling.com. Who do we got?
Starting things off, it's Muggin. Two kaijus tore the place apart. Dom Dom is going in a shark cage. Gunther continues to avoid Sammy like the plague. Drew made some bold claims. Woods has a chip on his shoulder. And Jey Uso finally laid claim to a singles title in a strong main event.
I should just copy and paste this for the show descriptions.
Yeah. Before the web starts to cry foul, Bron Breakker has a long, fruitful career ahead of him. He's going to be fine. I bet Rikishi will have a lot to say on social, seeing his son win.
Let's check right now. What is his?
Maybe Jay can say, I did it for Rikishi.
Well, he didn't say anything, but he did post a lovely GIF of a bunch of people celebrating. So
he's maybe happy. He was watching the football game. Maybe he's a Bills fan.
Maybe. All right, cool. Thank you very much. Let's go to Brian in New Jersey, who says, I thought that was a tremendous main event, elevated by the crowd. I didn't expect Breakker to lose the title this soon, but I also don't expect him to be lost in the shuffle after tonight. I could see Jay and Breakker having at least one rematch down the line. I'm liking the dialed-back build to Punk versus Drew and Hell in a Cell after months of brawling and yelling. Good progression with Woods. Dominic being suspended in a shark cage could be funny, calling back to the ladder match for his custody from the 2000s. Speaking of the 2000s, I fully expect Strowman and Reed closing next week's Raw with their match featuring a ring-breaking spot like Lesnar and Big Show did. Yes.
Yeah, the fact it's being so expected, I almost hope they have something more creative for it than just your non-finish with the two. I feel it's, you know, they've done that spot. Like, come up with something original.
Yeah, like what? Maybe the
I mean, they've had splashes on cars. They've had, I mean, they don't seem to be lacking creativity when it comes to physicality.
Maybe the ring like bursts into flames. Maybe it turns into like a cloud of smoke. I'm trying to think what they could do. You're limited by like the, you know, just the physics, right? They could fall through the ring. Haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, these are the problems Gotch and Hackenschmidt had about how to conclude their program.
Karthik sends a super chat here of $100 million. So thank you very much, Karthik, for that. Rich, were you guys fans of Lucha Underground when it happened? Do you think there's an appetite for that presentation in wrestling in 2024?
I think like many people, I really enjoyed Lucha Underground. I would say for the first two seasons, and I thought they got too far away from the plot, that I think it lost a lot of people along the way when it got into such supernatural territory. And I think it just became just sort of this, we had no restrictions in what we can do because it's all under the guise of this is a Hollywood production of what professional wrestling is. And I think that it certainly turned a corner on some people, but I would say that first two seasons, I thought they came at a time where people were desperate for a new presentation of pro wrestling, and they met that and introduced a lot. Like that was really Pentagon's breakout to many people, seeing him on US television for the first time. And like, there were just some exceptional performers that they had and experimented. Like, this was not something coming in and we're just going to mimic what else you see on national television at the time in 2014. Like, they came in with a whole new focus, and personally, like, I was just craving something different, and they provided something different. So I was especially, and I watched the entire run of Lucha Underground, so it's not as if I like checked out by the end, but the first two seasons I was very high on.
What do you think were the elements of the show that you believe should be adopted by other wrestling promotions?
I think you can certainly the old method of just like backstage segments having to be so plain and unimaginative. I think that was something that they played to their strength. I thought that was like a cool ability of them to make these like really professionally shot vignettes. They came up with that awesome concept with the Aztec Warfare match. Like, that to me, that was like the best. Their usage of Matanza, Jeff Cobb, like, they booked that guy as such a monster. I thought it was terrific the way they introduced him. And I think like just the overall abundance of lucha talent that I think is still very underrepresented when it comes to like WWE and AEW in a big way. Like, yes, you have lucha talent in these promotions, but I think like there's a much higher ceiling. And I personally look at like Pentagon and Phoenix, if they end up in WWE, seeing like how much, like what is the ceiling for these two? Because I see it being very high for a lot of these talents, like what AEW is trying to do with Hologram. I just think like there is a laneway that neither company has truly taken ownership of, that to me is for the taking, that is not there for WWE and AEW.
Thank you very much, Karthik, for those 100 rupees. Okay. We go to No Way, who sent $5. With Dom going into the cage, do we see Raquel Rodriguez coming back at Hell in a Cell, breaking off Rhea versus Raquel? I don't think she really has a storyline role in this feud. Now, of course, she's a former tag partner of Liv Morgan, but I don't... Like, what was Raquel and Liv's last interaction? Were they even at odds for any reason?
Oh, God. It was a while ago.
Yeah, I feel like they've been apart for some time. So, like, it's not like she would have any sort of, like... Yeah, you could always make up a reason, of course, but I also don't
know...
So
she would be showing up to... feud with Liv or to help Liv?
No Way is suggesting that she would be feuding or helping Liv.
Or breaking off Rhea versus Raquel is where he's getting to here. So it would be Raquel coming back.
So Raquel heel turn. It's interesting. I'm not that confident like in her abilities as a heel, honestly, to like kind of put her in such a high profile role right now for arguably the hottest program on Raw. So I don't see it personally, but maybe down the line, if you reintroduce her, she like, you know, catches enough momentum and she gets inserted in an organic way into all of this. I could see her having a feud with a heel Liv Morgan. I think a babyface Raquel versus a heel Liv would be like a great way to have Raquel be on a higher platform while like maybe eventually giving Liv a very impressive win. So, but at the moment, Raquel's stock is just, you're kind of starting from the beginning with her again, whenever she comes back. So I just don't see her being high profile enough to be inserted into this. So yeah, it could happen, but thank you very much for the super chat there. No Way. Thank you guys. Let's continue.
Writes, great episode of Raw. The New Day storyline is excellent and is almost taking advantage of the fact that they haven't been utilized well over the last couple of years. It's been very, very well written. Jay winning the title was a well-earned, memorable moment. Ibu stated that Braun was carrying an injury a couple of weeks ago. Maybe he's going to be out for a bit. Would you guys transition from Jay to Bronson Reed as Intercontinental Champion?
Yeah.
You guys transition. Okay. The wrestling on this show was quite consistent throughout. Drew's promo was excellent as usual, but I'm disappointed that they aren't closing Bad Blood.
Well, how do you know that? Did they say that what match would main event? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, chat room, inform us if we missed that. But I'm under the impression that we don't know what the main event is as yet. But somebody like Bronson Reed is so incredibly hot right now that I think, yeah, like you definitely, want to get the tuttle on him probably sooner than later. At the same time, I wouldn't be in any rush.
Like,
yeah, me neither. It'd be too much hot potatoing of that championship after Gunther had established his reign as that long. Like, you don't want to devalue that championship with too many changes just yet.
You don't, but you also don't want to be handcuffed with the idea that everyone's got to have this incredibly lengthy run. Like, you have to, it's all time and place and the timing of it. And, you know, you can have a really effective short reign too, but if I'm just putting the title on Jey Uso, like, I wouldn't necessarily, I'm never a fan of going into a title reign with like an end date already in mind. I think that just handicaps you to, like, you just don't know, like, maybe this is just, it's a, that ingredient Jey Uso needed, and it's the fans see him like triumphing in this big way and ride that wave as long as it's peaking.
So people in the chat are saying that Sean Ross Sapp is reporting that the main event is Cody and Roman versus the Bloodline. So I don't dislike it either. I mean, listen, Drew versus Punk in a cell. It's got the visual spectacle. It's, you know, the match that is ending the feud, presumably. But man, after that video they shot with how much like emphasis they're putting on their connections to Atlanta, I think that video was very responsible for making that Bloodline Cody match feel like a worthy main event. So I don't think you could have gone wrong with either one. How many more we got here? We got Matthew, who says, another excellent episode of Raw. Dare I say I'm enjoying the show so much, I don't mind the three-hour format at this stage. Every segment and match has meaning and a great story behind it, or far removed from the McMahon filler era of WWE TV. I will say I didn't expect Jay to lose the IC title, or sorry, to win the IC title tonight, because Breaker had a very short reign thus far. What does this mean for him? One could argue that both of these guys needed a solidifying win, as Jay had been spinning wheels for most of the summer, and Braun's main roster tenure is still well shy of the 1 year mark. Last note, color me surprised about the McMahon tweet today. This seems like more of a crisis mode PR work by his team. I know you have to be unbiased in journalism, but this is a sick, depraved man, as evidenced by the text messages alone, who needs to get his day in court. Quick note, there is a huge demand for this Raw being in the area. Secondary market prices were over $600 for lower bowl. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they were sold out, and it was not like it was a slow-moving ticket demand either. Like, this has been sold out for some time. Like, it's, you know, almost 9,000 tickets or so. So yeah, it was a very hot show in the market.
I could see Braun having a rematch with Jay. Otherwise, I'm trying to think, like, who are the other baby faces? I guess the question now is, like, can you turn Braun Breaker babyface? I get the sense, like, we haven't lived out his heel run enough yet. Like, I think you could save the face turn for much further down the line. So personally, I would like to see him continue as a heel. I'd like to see him. I mean, I do believe that he will win the title back from Jay, in my opinion. But if not that.
You have other options, like Bronson Priest? Reed coming out of this feud. Like, he's been built up really significantly.
I could see Braun and Priest, you know, as like a next challenge for the both of them. Trying to think of like an upper tier babyface, you know, that would make sense for him to. Like, we don't know what Seth Rollins is up to. Like, we don't know his status, but like, I think he'd be a perfect person to, you know, have a feud with Braun Breaker.
Like, Balor in the mix, you have Ilya in the mix. Like, you don't have a shortage of people that qualify into kind of that tier of guys that you can have in circulation there.
Punk would be free after Bad Blood, presumably.
I think you want to get a title over. I think you should not have it be deemed as like the main eventers don't go for this championship, whether it's a Priest, whether it's a Rollins. Like, I would not have that mindset, because that is how people put these titles into tiers, is the idea that this is above these people fighting for these titles.
Though Punk has said he wants to challenge for the world, so.
Well, start with Punk. A continent and yeah. Work your way up. Yeah. All right. Thanks to everyone for joining us tonight. We are back on Wednesday. Rewind to Dynamite coming up after Grand Slam. And then a final reminder, Pollock and Thurston, Thursday this week at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And then Way and I, beginning Friday, will be doing daily reviews of the Mr. McMahon series with episode one for free on Friday. Lots of great stuff up at postwrestlingcafe.com. We have got all of our regulars up this week. We recently did a Rewind Away covering the December 6th 2004 edition of Raw, featuring Trish Stratus against Lita and Chris Jericho as the guest general manager that night, where we got a live Fozzy performance, an interruption by Muhammad Hassan, and men getting laid.
L-E-I-D.
Yes.
Yeah.
Quite the time period in 2004.
Mm-hmm. And starting this Friday, daily reviews of Mr. McMahon on Netflix. So you'll have hopefully a chance to at least start the series by that point. And we'll be joining you guys every single day from Friday to Wednesday, covering every episode of the series. First episode is free. The rest of the episodes will be in the Post Wrestling Cafe.
All right. Check it all out, postwrestling.com. And we'll speak with you many more times this week. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Wei Ting and I are reviewing the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix with six straight days of reviews. The Double Shot will be coming back on Friday, September the 27th. We will be doing a free review of episode one, and then episodes 2 through 6 will be covered exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Plus, this month, MCU Later is back covering Agatha All Along, and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have you covered for New Japan's Destruction in Kobe. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.